40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Steve Kathan. Troubling new details have surfaced in the Newport News, Virginia school shooting that saw a six-year-old boy fire a gun and wound his teacher. Reporter Kelsey Jones of WTKR-TV.
We learned a lot of new details from school leaders like Superintendent Dr. George Parker, and at least one administrator was notified of a possible weapon on the student. Parker also shared with us that student's backpack was searched after it was reported that this student may have a weapon, and nothing was discovered in the book bag during that search.
A judge has fined President Trump's company $1.6 million for tax fraud days after a former top exec got jail time. Legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
This was not an unexpected outcome. The chief financial officer of the Trump Organization pleaded guilty to receiving off-the-book perks in lieu of salary for many years, which included such benefits as private school tuition for his grandchildren. And he ended up testifying against the Trump Organization as a participant in this illegal scheme.
Well, now to the White House, where CBS's Ed O'Keefe says the administration wants quick work from the special counsel just named in the sensitive documents case.
They have decided for now here at the White House to be legally transparent with the Justice Department, but not be straight with the American people and answer all the questions in hopes that the legal matter can be dealt with quickly and that they can move on.
Well, the death toll is now 8 in the South after tornadoes caused damage in several states. CBS's Omar Villafranca is north of Montgomery, Alabama.
It's almost as if this whole neighborhood was basically picked up, thrown into a blender, put on high, and then spit out. It's all part of a 20-mile path of destruction.
Well, CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson tells us storm-ravaged California is in for a new round of bad weather.
In addition to the flash flood concern that we have in some urban areas like San Francisco, as well as in the foothills of the Sierra and into large portions of the North Bay, we've got flood watches posted there for the amount of rain that we're going to get this weekend.
A regulatory filing details a salary reduction for one of the tech world's top executives. CBS's Jim Crisula.
Apple CEO Tim Cook will take a more than 40% pay cut this year from a year earlier as the company refigures how it calculates his compensation. Cook will be paid $49 million this year. The company says it's adjusting his pay after feedback from shareholders.
A tweet from the Dallas Zoo says a clouded leopard is missing. The zoo characterizes the animal as non-dangerous. Wall Street, right now the Dow is up 14 points. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Therapists, social workers, and counselors in Wisconsin can resume trying to change clients' gender identities and sexual orientations. The Evers administration banned conversion therapy in 2020, but Republicans who control the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules lifted the ban yesterday. LGBTQ rights advocates say conversion therapy has been debunked and is even harmful. A Republican member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission says he stands by what he said in an email praising lower voter turnout among Black and Hispanic voters in Milwaukee in November. Other members of the bipartisan panel say they want Robert Spindell to resign, but Spindell says he's staying put. In sports, the Bucks fell to Miami last night 108-102. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUK.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Mike, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us in your during your lunch hour on this Friday. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And in this noon hour, in the next segment, we're going to do a little headline quiz of the week. See how Jane and I do, is how much news we read this week. You can always play along. And then at 12:30, Randy Johnson, who is the large carnivore specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And large carnivore includes wolves.
Yes.
And so he is going to join us. We may have other questions about the black bears and some of the other stuff that he
deals with.
Yeah. But mostly he's going to come and join to talk to us about what's going on with the wolf management plan that is still open for public comment. And also just kind of the history of wolves in Wisconsin?
Yeah, and I'm curious. I can certainly understand why some are opposed to having a wolf population in Wisconsin. But
there, farm if
you know if you have livestock and things like that. But there are pros to this as well. So I'm curious to hear him explain that.
Absolutely. And then I've been wanting to do this all week. So hopefully we'll slip this in at the end of the hour. But TSA's weirdest finds of 2022. They're basically like a combination of just interesting ways to hide weapons or drugs. But people are creative.
They are.
And so good on some of those TSA folks really knowing what to look for and the things to touch and squeeze and open up.
And yeah. And can I just say, they're not paid nearly enough.
I have no idea what they're paid.
Because I looked a number of several years ago and just out of curiosity, and I think the base pay is only like in the mid-30s.
Well, it's also interesting because there's also a flip side of like because it's not very high. There's also sometimes people who are there. It's like TSA isn't always
their best
as far as you know. I remember I think it was last year that there were some weird rules around like pumped milk, like breast milk. And, you know, it's obviously liquid that has to make it through TSA. And there's this woman who went viral talking about her really, I don't know, traumatic's kind of overused these days, but like really crappy, like
experience
with TSA and what they said the rules are, and that she had to like throw away all this like milk that she had just pumped. And like, even though she's a new mom, and it was, yeah. So like, I'm not giving them a full pass, but this will be interesting to go through that list. But to start off with, I say this as someone who is married to a Mike and has a best friend named Mike. As you can imagine, and we've discussed this previously, that alone can be confusing. I have to have them listed in my phone as two separate people.
Sure.
With not the name Mike. My argument is that we have too many Mikes. We don't need any more Mikes.
Just zeroing in on Mike in particular.
Particularly that name. We have too many Mikes. And if for no other reason than in the house, you know, we've talked a lot about the house now that...
The 118th?
The 118th House of Representatives in the Capitol. There will now be more guys named Mike then women chairing committees under the new Republican majority.
Oh, that's so not surprising.
So House Republicans have announced this week the slate of committee chairs for new Congress. Six of them will be chaired by a man named Mike or Michael. Meanwhile, just three will be chaired by women.
And they're not all named Ann or something,
nope,
right?
They don't share a first name. And I just, you know, I think it's because there's an oversaturation of that name. It's nothing to do with the fact that there's not enough women in the GOP or
anything like that,
or giving the deserving women in the GOP more power. It's just because the name Michael is overused. I think that's my takeaway from this.
All right.
From this observation.
The bold stance.
And there's so many other great names. And they don't have to be like hipster crazy names. I was looking at the names I have saved for like boys' names.
Okay.
And like Beckett, Gabriel, Toby, Bobby, Clark. There's so many names, and they don't have to be like Phineas or whatever, you know, some of those crazy ones. Eric, Hank. Let's bring Hank back. I love the idea. I kind of love the idea of naming a little kid like Hank or Frank or what, like just like a toddler running around like being like, Frank, come here.
Old guy name?
Yes. I mean, our dog's named Cliff, so. But, you know, I bring this up partially because it's hilarious and also because, you know, I think it's hard to be a woman in politics no matter what, no matter which party you're in. I think the amount of threats you get against you is higher. I think the expectations of what everything you're supposed to encapsulate, and you can't be too domineering, but you have to be respected and all this stuff. I think no matter which party you're in, it's harder to be a politician and a woman. And I'm not a politician, period. But I would be willing to bet it's a lot harder to be a woman in the GOP than a Democrat. And interestingly enough, in the same week that this story about how few women will be chairing committees in Congress compared to men named Mike, Rebecca Clayfish, emerging from her sabbatical,
yeah,
is that what we want to call it?
I would have called it a cocoon.
This was even in December after the election. She kind of came out and she's back heading up the 1848 Project, and which was her thing before. It was her unofficial, not at all tied to her campaign.
Right.
But what she was doing before she actually launched her campaign. And so now she's trying to recruit more conservatives to run, and with that, more women to run. So this was a story by Molly Beck yesterday in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
It's a good piece.
It is a good piece, but it's like one of those things where I'm reading it, and I've been vocal that while I don't politically agree with Clayfish, I think it's embarrassing for the party how much they backdoored her. But she said in this article, Clayfish wants to help more women run for office after shocking treatment of family. And the article goes into what she talks about and what she highlights as being the shocking treatment of her family I'll say the story before I get my opinion. Her daughter went to a dance with Brian Hagedorn's son,
Supreme Court Justice,
who was this deciding vote for the Donald Trump election, one of the lawsuits as far as recounting and overturning the election in 2020. And
Hagedorn voted against
Donald Trump, basically. Yep. And at one point, Rebecca had tweeted out a picture of them going to a dance together. And because Donald Trump is a petty person, he used that supposedly he used that against Rebecca Clayfish in his endorsement of Tim Michaels instead of Clayfish. And that in most of this article, and this was a interview she gave with Wisconsin Eye this week of how poorly her kids were treated and how she thinks she is a shining example of why women don't want to get into politics, because why would you want to put your family through that? Which is all true. Like, everything she said was true.
Yep.
But I feel like she's missing, she's not saying the actual thing.
Which is
that her party backdoored her so badly. And I feel like that, because I don't feel like that story about the kids got that much attention. Like, it was there, but I feel like the bigger cautionary tale is at that's with the stakes that high, your party didn't think you could win. And so at the last minute, they pulled in someone else who also didn't win. And like, that's the part that she's like, the fact that she's pointing to how her family was treated instead of how she was treated.
Right.
It's like, because she just, I mean, she obviously still wants to be part of the party. And the whole thing of like, party over, like in like this facade of helping women and we should get women to run. And like, I can understand why they don't want to run because of their families. Like, it's like, no, they don't want to. I mean, people don't want to run because this party is inherently misogynistic and will not lift in this state, has not lifted up women in your party very well to positions of power.
Right.
I mean, there are, I think, of the women who are in the state legislature right now, like 61% are Democrats. So there are women Republicans that have been elected.
But they don't head anything.
What do they head? I mean, and especially now Janelle Branchon just got kicked off. Alberta Darling is retiring. You know, some of the names that I feel like come to top of the head faster. But I think it's like you're almost there. Like, you almost got it in this story, but you're not willing to actually say the thing that really happened.
Well, and I do find it interesting that after her experience, that she would think that any woman that she can encourage to go into politics for Wisconsin Republicans is going to be treated any better.
I know.
How do you sell that?
Because there was no, I mean, there's certain, I'm sure there's conversations amongst, behind closed doors of looking at what happened and Michaels versus did we back the wrong horse and stuff like that. But I think they didn't believe that a woman could win. And whether they want to say it was just the people who opted to back Michaels with only 3 months, like 3 months ahead of the primary, 4 months ahead of the primary, was because they didn't think she could win because of who she is as her background and character and stuff, and regardless of her gender, or if they just didn't think a woman could win. But that is, I read it and I was like, ah, you're almost there.
So near.
But it is, I mean, because I think the kids thing, no matter what, you face that when your family is on the line, no matter what. But anyways, all right, well, we're going to take another break. When we come back, a little quiz. How closely were you paying attention to the news this week? Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
K-E, Mike, Mike, Mike. Mike, 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 M-I-K-E, Mike, M-I-K-E, Mike, M-I-K-E, Mike, 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 Mike. Mike, 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 Mike.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels, said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Wait a minute. How about this? Listen to me, you lantern-jawed cretin, you horned-eyed homunculus. You are going to do what's right for the people of Wisconsin. You're putting cans of water in our water, destroying the greatest university system in the country, and public education. Knock it off. That is unlikely to be said. That's what I'd say.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
You care for the house, the kids, and our future. Ashiro's day is never done. So let's start saving a little more now. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings. Visit AsiaRetirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy this afternoon with a high of 31. Winds out of the north, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows level off around 19 tonight, partly cloudy. A blend of clouds and sun again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 35. Temperatures well above average Sunday and Monday, with highs from the upper 30s to the low 40s. Chance for scattered rain showers Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 27 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Happy Friday. Well, I think we've kind of come to a nearer end of our news segment for this week. So, you know, we love to do a little bit of a quiz.
Yeah.
How close were we paying attention this week? And this is where we read a question. They're usually multiple choice, and we don't find out the answers until the end. So I'm going to keep track of what our answers are.
Okay.
Let me just get that open. Killing time, in case we have different answers.
Because there are valuable prizes at stake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number one. Where did President Biden visit this week for the first time since he took office? A, Ukraine. B, U.S.-Mexico border. C, Taiwan. D, Korean demilitarized zone.
He went to the border.
He did go to the border. We don't even have to wait. We know that one.
We know this.
Which food items prices had the highest jump of all grocery items last year? A, eggs. B, beef. C, citrus fruits. D, butter.
I'm going with eggs.
I think you're right. There's a chance that it's beef. But I think like a percentage jump, it's probably eggs. But we don't know. We'll find out at the end. All right, fill in the blank. IBM lost its place as the top U.S. patent recipient for the first time since 1993 to Apple. I don't know how to pronounce this. What's the big Chinese company?
Huawei.
Thank you. God damn it. Intel, Samsung.
I'll go Apple.
All right. I'm going to go Samsung. Which previously endangered part of the Earth is expected to mostly return to its pre-crisis state by 2040?
We know this.
Great Barrier Reef, Amazon Rainforest, Ozone Layer, Lake Mead. All four of those not doing great. But
no.
Ozone Layer.
Go Ozone.
And number five, which U.S. city had the most traffic congestion in 2022, according to analytics firm INRIX? Atlanta, Houston, Los Angeles, Chicago.
I'd go L.A.
I read this article, so I know. Chicago.
Oh, is it?
Well,
we'll find out.
So with the ones that we put in, we got 5 out of 5. All right. You're perfect. Here are the answers. So Biden did indeed visit the U.S.-Mexico border for the first time as president, which kind of surprises me. And he also extended Title 42, which we haven't really covered on this show.
No,
we haven't. As far as it's basically extending a Trump era law that was basically having people who are coming and seeking asylum having to do so before they actually reach
the border.
And, but I think as we talked to Pam Yonke this week, hopefully we can figure this out soon, because there is a lot of people who a lot of industries who need labor.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people who want to live here
and work
and work and work hard. And so we'll see how that progresses. But then egg prices, not beef. You were right. Egg prices had the highest jump in the last year in how much they cost. Samsung was the top U.S. patent recipient in the last year. The ozone layer is expected to mostly recover by 2040. And Chicago has the most traffic congestion.
Back to the eggs for just a second. What I have read is that one of the reasons the prices have gone so crazy is because of that avian flu.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And when you and I, when I first joined the show back in July, I want to say we spoke to someone at one point about trying to keep flocks apart. And it really decimated poultry industries, this avian flu. And that's one of the reasons why your scrambled costs more.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily just inflation. It's because of the actual supply.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what happened. Was that May when the baby formula shortage happened?
Mm-hmm.
And that was not just supply. It was supply and demand in the way that it was a contaminated batch. And again, because there's basically one company. That this is why monopolies are bad.
Yes.
Not just because they can fix prices, but because when they screw up, doesn't leave a lot of options for other companies to come in and ramp that that supply up.
So pick up that slack.
So people can actually get the things that they need. But yeah, so that was fun. But I feel like...
Are you surprised that Chicago is considered worse traffic than Los Angeles?
Have you driven in Chicago?
Not for many years. They scare me.
Chicago scares you?
Chicago traffic scares me.
Just because... Well, also, I mean, I feel like it's... But it is so funny to me. I guess it depends on what they're measuring. Because it's like congestion versus... Like, what does that actually qualify as?
Right.
But here's more information on that. So you'd think it'd be Los Angeles or New York, but it turns out that Chicago is the place where people get stuck in traffic the longest. So according to this analytics firm, INRIX, the average Chicago driver lost 155 hours sitting in traffic in 2022.
Wow.
And it was up 104 hours from 2021.
It's wow.
And it was marking the second year in a row that Chicago nabbed the top spot in the United States. And so the only cities that are around the world that are more congested is London, which outpaced Chicago with their average driver being stuck in traffic for 156 hours. So only by 1 hour. And I always just think about this as the conversation around the expansion of the I-94 is happening in Milwaukee and the people who are for that and how much they are upset with the traffic. It's like, oh, you don't know what traffic is.
You don't know from traffic, right?
Because, I mean, in the 6 months I've been driving to Waukesha now, I'm not sure it's ever taken me over an hour to get home as far as traffic starting to, yeah. All right, well, we're taking another break. When we come back, Randy Johnson will be here to talk about wolves. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. New details in a stunning school shooting. CBS's Jim Crisullo.
Newport News school district officials say at least one administrator at Richneck Elementary School was notified of a possible weapon on a 6-year-old student before he shot his 25-year-old first grade teacher a week ago. They say no gun was found when the boy's backpack was checked.
A judge fines former President Trump's company $1.6 million for a tax fraud scheme that landed a top executive behind bars. Legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Remember, this is a financial penalty against the Trump Organization and not against Donald Trump or his children individually.
8 people are dead after the tornadoes that spun through several southern states. 14 Alabama counties report damage, including the one where this man lives.
So I looked out and saw that there was roofing in our backyard. There was roofing beside our house. There was roofing in front of our house. All over. Mess everywhere.
Power is out to tens of thousands. CBS News Brief, I'm Steve Kathan.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Natnair with your headlines. Wisconsin state senators are working on a bill to protect victims of child sex trafficking from being prosecuted for prostitution. The Safe Harbor bill, still in its early stages, State Senator Jesse James of Altoona is the lead author in seeking co-sponsors until later this month. The bill will protect children from prostitution charges as victims of sex trafficking because they can't legally consent to the acts involved. The measure needs to pass both the Senate and the Assembly before being signed into law by the governor. A Milwaukee hospital postponed all elective non-urgent surgeries until mid-February or later. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporting a memo to staff at Ascension Columbia St. Mary's Hospital to review surgeries and move non-urgent procedures to a later date. The hospital has been under regulatory scrutiny as it struggles with staffing shortages. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry.
What am I fearing? Why do I worry at all? 'Cause I can feel that.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
The Republican Party on a national level, how many years did they investigate Hillary and Bill? They're still going to that.
They're still looking for her emails, right? But they don't look in the Trump septic tank for half the top secret classified documents that he was flushing during his term. When one party doesn't care about governing, just don't allow anything to happen when the Democrats are in charge. And then they think the American people are going to get boonswoggled and vote Republican again.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
We stand on the shoulders of women who came before us.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn.
Join us. Visit WeSaySaveIt.org and take control of your financial future by saving for retirement.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
With Kristen Bry, no matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in. If you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. And you can always join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And I know people have strong, not everyone, but some people have very strong feelings about our next topic. You'll remember that a couple years ago, we made national news with how a wolf hunt was handled, and we are now in the throes of trying to update the wolf management plan. And so here to talk more about that is Randy Johnson, who is the large carnivore specialist with Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and he focuses on statewide wildlife management surrounding black bears, wolves, and the occasional cougar. How occasional are we talking?
A handful a year.
Are cougars like solitary animals? Do they not go in packs? So you kind of just see them when they're roaming by themselves?
That's correct. Yeah, they're a solitary animal. We don't have a breeding population, but what we see here in Wisconsin is individual transients that are coming from the Dakotas, Nebraska, our closest other populations. And so they're trekking out looking for their own territory, and a few make it all the way to Wisconsin.
Wow. Well, you know, they're really, really ambitious. All right. So as someone who's not a large carnivore specialist, what is kind of the history of wolves in Wisconsin? Have they always been native to here? Has there been ebbs and flows of how they migrate? Because obviously what happened a couple years ago was terrible, and we're back in this place of like, what do we do with them? And I understand that there's both the ecosystem that they fulfill, and there's also the threat that they pose to farms and livestock and everything. And so kind of what is the historical nature of wolves in Wisconsin?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks again for having me. I appreciate it. It's kind of a long and at times very controversial and pretty nuanced backstory with wolves in Wisconsin and really everywhere across the country. We're speaking about the historical background of wolves in the state. They are a native species. They would have been here, you know, thousands of years ago, and they were here, you know, all across the state, really all across the lower 48 states, up until about the 1800s, the early 1900s. At that time, when the European colonization and settlement was taking place all across the country, those settlers' attitudes toward wolves and other carnivore species, like mountain lions, for example, were not good. They did not like them around. They saw them as competition, feared them, et cetera. And so we saw, government-sponsored bounty programs, poisoning campaigns. It was a very concentrated effort to get rid of these animals, and it was pretty darn successful. By the early 1900s, most wolves in the state had been eliminated.
Wow.
The same thing played out in our neighboring states until about the 1950s, the 1960s. Really, in the lower 48 states, the only wolf population that remained was in northern Minnesota. Wolves were gone from Wisconsin.
Hmm.
And once we get to the 60s, the 70s, attitudes start to change. People start to appreciate these animals. They start to understand them a little bit better. And importantly, legal protections, the bounties went away, the poisoning went away, and the Endangered Species Act, Keystone legislation, the early 70s. And that sets the stage for where we're at today. Through the 80s, through the 90s, these populations came back on their own, naturally. Again, very similar to what we're seeing with cougars, where you have these individuals that trek out and they start to look for habitats and territories. And when wolves did that, they came out of Minnesota into Wisconsin, and they found prey, open habitat, and they found each other. And they started to establish packs. And through the 80s, through the 90s, into the 2000s, we went from, basically zero wolves to a few dozen to a few hundred. Up until today, where we see about 1,000 wolves in the state, and most of the suitable habitat for them today seems to be pretty occupied with wolves. So we've kind of come full circle with wolves in the state.
And so while they were almost eliminated and before their kind of resurgence and coming back and establishing packs, what changes did that make in the food change and to like the ecosystem of like, was that damaging to the larger environment by not having them here?
Yeah, it's a good question. And frankly, a lot of that, I think we're still unraveling, both here in the state, but really all across wolf range. As these carnivores start to come back into these systems, you start to see changes. You're introducing a top level predator. In Wisconsin, their primary prey is white-tailed deer. That's what they like to eat the most. There's other critters on the menu, like snowshoe hare, for example, beaver, and they can actually be quite flexible in their diet, but they can eat a number of different things. But, as they're being wolves, right, just going about their daily life, doing their thing, they influence the environment around them in a lot of different ways, both directly through killing some of these animals and consuming them, but also indirectly through changing their behaviors, changing where they're at in the landscape. Like deer especially, they react to the presence of a wolf by changing their behavior. Maybe they move more at night, or they stay out in the open, or they feed in certain areas less. And a deer is a great example. It changes the browsing pressure, right? And so by deer moving where they're browsing, feeding, you can start to see changes in the vegetation. And generally speaking, you start to see increased plant diversity, and that translates directly into increased biodiversity. With rare species of plants, more species of plants, you get different insects, et cetera, et cetera. And you start to see these almost chain reactions all throughout the landscape, many of which are pretty subtle and take some time. But we continue to study those types of things and continue to unravel all the different the impacts.
So fast forward to today, and obviously I don't have the numbers off at the top of my head, but 2 years ago, it sounds like from what I remember, it was chaotic, maybe is the right word, as far as what was leading up to the wolf hunt that led to the wolf hunt killing like 80% more than what the threshold was supposed to be or something like that. Can you give more details of what happened that we're trying to not repeat?
Yeah. Long story short, that was wolves were delisted from the Federal Endangered Species Act, and the department was court ordered to implement a season. And that comes back to current state law, which basically directs us to have a wolf season in Wisconsin whenever they're not federally listed. So that season went off. It was very unusual, I would say, in the way that it came about. Certainly not something that the department wanted to see take place in the way that it played out. But it really brought attention to that issue, more attention to that issue. And so that's one, certainly one part of the management plan that we're updating. There's several pieces in there that directly try to address some of those concerns that we saw from that season, among a lot of other things. The other thing I think that's important to realize too is even following that season, the department continues to monitor the wolf population, and based on survey results from the year following that season, we still see a healthy wolf population in the state. It did decline a little bit from prior to that hunt, which was expected given the nature of it. But nonetheless, we still see wolves largely occupying most of that habitat that's good quality habitat for them. We still see some 250 packs of wolves in the state. And so, that's another thing we've learned along the way is that wolf populations are pretty resilient to disturbances like harvest or other sources of mortality.
We're talking to Randy Johnson, who is the large carnivore specialist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, about wolves. And so it's a public comment. Like, it just got extended so that people can still put in their public comment for updating the wolf management plan. So what is kind of the bullet point of the arguments for limiting how many wolves can be hunted versus the arguments for being more aggressive?
Yeah, it in a word, it all comes down to trying to find some balance, right? We kind of discussed a lot of the ecological value that wolves have. We've done social science work that indicates the majority of Wisconsin residents have a cultural appreciation for wolves. They're an important part of our state's history, our culture, and so there's a lot of value from that perspective as well. The flip side, of course, is there can be some conflict with wolves. They are a large carnivore. Not only can they obviously take down wild prey, but they can take down cattle, they can kill pets, they can kill, you name it. We don't really see impacts to, human safety concerns, if you will. But nevertheless, that's still a legitimate concern that people have. And so it's really important to understand that those threats, that conflict is real. It is impactful for those that it occurs to. And yet it's, in many cases, manageable. We have the tools in place to really try to address a lot of these things. And so this plan is really focused on trying to find a balance between those two things. We want to support a healthy wolf population in this state, sustainable long-term, but also put a lot of attention on addressing and reducing conflict where it occurs, again, to try to find that balance.
And so with the wolf population, are we talking mostly like Northwest, or is it all of the North, or like where is, like, if you want to see a wolf, where's the most likely place that you're going to be able to see one?
Yeah, Northwest is probably the best place to try to go see one. The Northwest part of the state has probably the highest density of wolves. The wolf range in the state is pretty extensive. It's really all across the forested parts of the northern part of the state, as well as down into the central forest, probably some a third to maybe half of the state, not obviously in every spot, but locally.
Not Milwaukee. You
know, not Milwaukee. No. But we do actually, believe it or not, we have individual wolves that pop up all over the state from time to time. Again, it's this same pattern of healthy wolf population, young animals trek out on their own, they disperse, and when they take off, they can show up just about anywhere. Now, they're typically transient, they keep moving along, but we have wolf observations pop up all across the state, really every year.
Randy, I assume you do a lot of work in the field, and you must just over the years have seen some really amazing things. Just, I think to see a wolf pack moving as a pack, or seeing a cougar, or, you know, a bear and cubs, and it's just got to be thrilling and also a little frightening.
Yeah, I don't do as much field work as I'd like to. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a big part of the job and why folks get into this field. And it's also, again, it comes back to, we know that the general public really appreciates those opportunities to see a bear. I was just talking with a lady yesterday, actually, that spoke about seeing a bear and two cubs, you know, run across the road, and how meaningful that was and how impactful that was. And I think the same can be said for wolves in the state. And so we recognize that, we appreciate that, and also recognize we need to try to find this balance, because there are some real impacts out there too. And that's what the plan strives to do.
So quickly, just for survival tips, if someone were to see a large carnivore, what are the actual things that you're supposed to do? Because I feel like the thing that the urban legend is, with a bear, you pretend that you're dead. Or so, like, what are the things, at least the animals you focus on, what should you do if you were to come across any of these in the wild as a human?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, first things first, I think just pause and recognize that most of the time these animals want nothing to do with you. Pause. The best tool you have is the thing between your ears. And so slow down, pause. You know, if it's a bear, often you just don't care, or a wolf for that matter, you just kind of want to back out of the situation. You don't want to surprise them. You don't want to startle them. Oftentimes it's just that simple. Make sure they have a way out. Make sure you can back up. And 99% of the time they're going to resolve themselves if you just calm down and kind of back out of the situation.
All right. Good to know. Disengage.
I still think I'm going to play dead.
You don't care?
I'm curling into a ball, and I'm just going to cross my fingers and say goodbye.
All right. Well, Randy Johnson is the large carnivore specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Thank you so much for updating us. We will link all of the information you sent us as far as where people can provide their public comment, learn more about the situation. And what is the timeline? It's for the end of the month?
End of February.
End of February.
The folks have until the end of February to log on to the website. You said you've got the link. So log on to the website, review the plan, share your thoughts. It's important that we hear from folks on this plan.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. All right. We'll be right back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies this afternoon with highs around 31. Winds out of the north, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows around 19 tonight, partly cloudy skies. Mainly sunny skies and calm. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 35. Overcast skies Sunday with a high of 40. 42, chance for scattered showers Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 27 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Happy Friday. So, I've been wanting to do this all week just because I thought it was fun. But TSA, who among us have not had a very expensive toiletry that you had to throw away? Or obviously water bottles. You know, if you travel enough, you know that there's certain things you cannot bring with you.
Don't even try.
There's certain politicians who sometimes forget that they can't bring guns.
Oh, loaded guns.
Airplanes. But there are certain people who know that they're not allowed to bring these things on planes. And yet, they try to sneak them on anyways. And so every year, a number of concealed objects, including weapons and drugs, involve a high level of creativity, sneakiness, or audacity, are inducted into the agency's, being TSA's, top 10 catches.
This is the TSA's list?
This is the TSA's list.
Oh, so someone there has a sense of humor that just doesn't seem to apply.
Transportation Security Administration is what TSA stands for. And so this is the agency spokeswoman, Lisa Farbstein, said, these are what we call good catches. The list offers recognition to the TSA officers across the country because they catch things. And I just thought this dates back to 2016. They've been doing this. So let's start with number 10. Cash in crutches at El Paso International Airport.
Did you say crutches?
Crutches. Like
crutches.
Like I broke my leg, crutches. Or maybe not leg, but sprained my ankle.
So it's a hollow.
A passenger's crutches triggered the alarm when officers noticed an unusual object in the base of the mobility aid, which I don't know if that's the top or the bottom. But
that would be the bottom.
The bottom, yeah. So the mysterious wad turned out to be literally dirty money, an object that does not fall under TSA's definitions of things that can cause a catastrophic incident on a flight. But I think it's because you can only bring
$10,000.
And so if they were trying to bring in more money and maybe not have to report that, they snuck it into their crutches.
Oh, seemed like such a good idea.
You think they like rolled it?
Yeah.
Like big bills and then they just rolled it?
And then stuck them down the,
yeah.
You know?
All right. Number 9. This happened at Mitchell Airport. This happened right in our backyard.
Congratulations.
So good job, TSA at Mitchell Airport. A grenade.
A grenade?
The spokeswoman said officers find a surprisingly high number of hand grenades. Even if it's inactive, you are not permitted because it can create a panic among passengers on the plane. So she recommends stashing the explosive item in your car, handing it over to a non-traveling companion, or surrendering it to the TSA officer. Or just maybe leave your grenade at home. But yeah, I guess at Mitchell Airport, they found someone with a grenade.
So many questions. Do you go to Grenades R Us? I mean,
I don't know.
Can you just go?
I'm sure you can order that on the internet.
I'll check with Amazon today.
I'm sure like military buffs have stuff like that. But like, why are you packing it?
Right. I mean,
why are you bringing it?
Exactly. It's your support grenade. Your emotional.
And also, it's like, I wonder what is the threshold? I don't know if they get into this on the, like what you pack and check into your suitcase that goes under the plane versus what's on your carry-on. I don't know.
Lots of questions about the grenade.
Cattle prods.
Oh,
number 8. Geez. Cattle prods at Washington Dulles International Airport.
Never travel without them.
No. Officers extracted a pair of electric cattle prods tucked inside a guitar case. So not the guitar itself, but a guitar case. The bovine pokers can be are against the rules that forbids tools longer than 7 inches, which could be used as a bludgeon. Or you can electrocute someone.
Well, hello.
They would have been, these would have been fine in a checked bag.
The cattle prod?
You can check. Just anyone who's at home taking notes about what you can and cannot bring. So you can check the cattle prods into your checked bag.
Okay. But not a carry-on. But no grenades at all.
No grenades at all,
rats.
Apparently. Number 7, a gun in a PlayStation at the Atlanta airport. So they found the weapon inside the video game console. And it was an especially gratifying catch for the TSA. PlayStations don't come with guns in the middle of them, Farbstein said. Number 6, drug-filled scrunchies at Boise Airport.
Boise?
Yeah, in Boise. So you remember, scrunchies are kind of, I have some scrunchies at home. They're not maybe as popular as they were in the 80s and 90s, but you think they're like an elastic band that are then covered in fabric. And so there was, let's see.
But you got to put a tube in it or something.
It doesn't say what kind of drugs they were. The pictures of them, those are little blue pills. So maybe it was Molly or ecstasy or something like that.
Fentanyl or something.
Maybe. But yeah. And so they were inside. So that must be when you go through the little x-ray machine. And sometimes, because especially when I had longer hair, if it was up in a bun,
yeah.
I've had them go, I need to touch your hair.
Oh, because sure,
like, there was just stuff in there.
Make sure there's nothing in there.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
like a grenade.
Or drugs. but yeah, so some woman tried to sneak him in. They got caught in the scrunchie. This one's interesting when you see the picture. At Richmond International Airport, there was a knife in a laptop. So the passenger's bag set off an alarm. The officers had to rescan each item, and they honed in on the laptop. And after unscrewing the covers,
yep.
They removed a knife from the electronic innards of the computer.
Wow.
And they have a picture of this. I'm reading this from Washington Post for anyone who wants to actually go see the pictures. And it's like a little shanky knife. Wild. All right, number 4. Gun in a sling at Greater Rochester International Airport. So the x-ray machine noticed something suspicious about the man with the arm sling. Officers asked him to remove his limb support, and he warned that the sling was a little heavy.
Uh-huh.
And his response to the discovery, I forgot I put it in my sling.
Oh, as one does, Kristen.
It was inches from his skin. How did he forget? Farbstein said. Number 3, firearm in peanut butter jar at JFK.
Doesn't that affect the firing mechanism?
Probably, but I think it looks like it was not fully loaded, so it could fit inside the peanut butter. It was like a big thing of Jif. Again, why are you bringing Jif on the airplane? But whatever. I mean, or a gun. Number 2, we're getting to the top because we're running out of time. Gun inside a chicken. At Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport.
Not a live chicken.
So instead, no, it's like in the, where you put the stuffing.
Okay.
In that hole, they had put a gun.
A gun.
Again, these things, I mean, just tell me you're bringing a raw chicken. And I'm like, why are you bringing this on the airplane, dude? Like, what are you doing? All right, number 1, because we only have 30 seconds left. Pills inside candy packaging at LAX. And it's a bag of Skittles. That was sealed shut. They thought it was just little candies in there, and everyone knows that Skittles are my favorite. Not Skittles. Not Skittles inside, and they got caught. All right. Well, we're taking a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, Lori Bertrand, the president and CEO of Ronald McDonald House Charities in Northeast Wisconsin, will be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Women get a lot of advice about self-care these days, but one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.